Shalom LaYehudim, Shalom LaBnei Noach, Shalom Goyim. It's the evening of the second day, Kaf Hei B'Menachem Av, Tavshin Ayin Hei, Parshas Ra'eh, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 9 August 2015, webcasting from the hills of Judea, shunned by the Jewish state. Isn't that peculiar? Here is Israel, the self-defined Jewish state, but when in 1967 it came into possession of Judea, origin of the word Jew, Israel refused to claim it. Setting policy really for the next half century to this very day, the state of Israel has held out Judea as bait to the enemy. Israel has wanted to sell it back to the Arabs in exchange for peace. In a way, this is reminiscent of the State Department Jew boys and journalists like them in the MSM, whose calling card is Jew boy Israel basher, exactly as the Gentiles want. Danny Kurtzer, Martin Indyk, are all men who, like capos in a death camp, sell out their fellow Jews, in this case for fame and fortune. In this sense, there's a similarity between Israelis and LTF, little Tommy Friedman and Jeffrey Goldberg, etc. Neither the diaspora Jew boys nor the Israeli ruling class has ever supported keeping Judea and Samaria as of right. Instead of claiming legal possession in 1967, Israel, ever since, has seen Judea as a bargaining chip to be sold to the enemy in exchange for words and documents proclaiming peace. In this, there is a strange connection between Indyk and Kurtzer on the one hand, and Netanyahu and Steinitz on the other. Judea is not to be claimed as of right, but held up as bait to the Arabs. Israelis, secular Israelis, have never wanted to claim Judea as theirs, presumably because that would be, as the expression goes, too Jewish. And so we scratch our heads and try to understand last week's festival of bashing Haredi Jews and bashing national religious Jews, really the Jewish religion. For everybody knows at some level of awareness that the backbone, the skeleton of the Jewish nation is the religion. The secular Zionist, very much like the American anti-Zionist, like my own grandparents of blessed memory, self-described Yiddishists and social democrats, all believe in the existence, the possibility of a Jewish national identity without religion. Reform Jews' Bull Commandment, which in a way is really the first commandment, to keep the Sabbath. Ask a Reform Jew, what is the holiest day in the year? And he will say, Yom Kippur. No, it's Shabbos. In the Ten Commandments, there's no mention of Yom Kippur. There is a mention of Shabbos. And when you keep Shabbos, willy-nilly, will you, you isolate yourself from the larger non-Jewish society. Trouble is, in the Western democracies, the non-Jewish society is most attractive and in our time welcoming. For thousands of years, Gentiles in the West demanded that Jews convert to Christianity in order to be accepted. In modern times, though, Jews just have to stop being Jews. All the foregoing really has been a way to think about Friday's weekend newspapers here and the MSM here, which were awash in Jew bashing, that is, the bashing of the Jewish religion, for producing that murderer Schlissel with his knife, for fostering homophobia, and for adhering to the old biblical prohibition against sodomy. How old-fashioned. And also under attack was religious Zionism, which produced the murderers of that Arab baby, and then yesterday the father died too. The army and the police in Yosh on this evening are on high alert for acts of revenge by the Arabians. And I can only conclude that what moves these people here in Israel to bash the religion, the movement, the Haredim, is the same that moved the children of Israel in the Sinai wilderness periodically, rebelling and complaining, as with the 12 spies, refusing to embrace the land that Hashem was giving them. Yeah, Friday we saw this riptide of commentary attacking the Jewish religion for opposing sodomy, because Judaism teaches Haredim to hate gay people. Schlissel murdered that poor teenager, who only wanted to support her friends because Haredim are taught to hate gay people. Judaism in these commentaries was the culprit, which drove that man to do what he did? I, of course, disagree. I think Schlissel is proof of the opposite claim. He is proof of what an extraordinary community of people the Haredim are, who never, ever, in all these years of these Sodomites on parade, ever produced such an incident. The case of Yishai Schlissel is the exception that shines a powerful light on Judaism for producing only this one evil man in all these years. If Haredi Judaism had been preaching and indoctrinating its young people toward homicidal hatred of Sodomites, then for sure they did a lousy job if all they could come up with is this one character in all this time. In a similar vein, I was also stunned by the settler bashing here, on the assumption that that fatal arson in that Arab village was the handiwork of a national religious fanatic. First of all, it's just ugly that these commentators do not extend the benefit of the doubt to their fellow Jews and bide their time a bit. If it turns out, God forbid, that it was an out-of-control Jew who was the arsonist, there will be time to bash the settlers to the commentators' heart's content. In the meantime, they might not jump to the conclusion, as they did, and let loose with snarling hatred for 500,000 Jews living in Judea and Samaria. Here, too, is a hatred of Judaism the religion. And for these critics, the problem is a Judaism that, again, sets you apart as special when you don't want to be special. Sima Kadmon, a veteran doctrinaire leftist opinionated idiot, let loose with, quote, "No, we are not better than them." She was saying that Jews are not better than the Arabs, who maul us in their terror horrors with a certain periodicity. They are terrorists, she would say, but here is proof that we Jews are terrorists too. These are Israelis who do not attend synagogues, but the Church of Moral Equivalence, which denies the Jewish identity as the chosen people, and a better people than our neighbors. As with that homicidal Haredi with a knife, even if the arsonists were settlers, again, they remain the exception, which could be used to argue that the next Nobel Prize for Peace be awarded to the Jews in Judea and Samaria for our restraint, our passivity in the face of endless homicidal satanic aggressions against us by our Arab neighbors. Any other nation, the Russians, look what they did to the Chechens, or the Turks, look what they did to the Armenians, or the Croatians or the Poles, would long ago have rampaged through the Arab communities here and not stopped until all of them were driven east and across the Jordan River. The settlers in Judea and Samaria deserve a collective Nobel Prize for peace, for our restraint, when targeted by these Vildachayas, these wild animal-like Arabs, forever trying to and succeeding from time to time in murdering us. But in the face of this truth, the anti-religious and the MSM and the politicians and the cultural luminaries whom they interview perceive just the opposite. They look upon the settlers as a society of wild, out-of-control people, Arab-hating criminals who like the Haredim educate their children to hate and attack them. And Ynet, the veteran and centrist, usually military correspondent, Ron Ben Ishai, likened the doctrine of the culprits for that arson attack to Jewish jihadism, identical in every detail to Islamic jihadism. In Haaretz, the most off-the-chart leftist journalist in the country, Gideon Levy, wrote, quote, "Israelis stab gay people and burn children." This isn't a slander. This is no exaggeration. I'm sight translating in this dry description. Israelis stab gay people. Why in the plural? It was just one guy. And as for burning children, this one case may be unique in Israeli history. And from this, he invents a collective guilt that spreads over thousands of people, even millions. Is Gideon Levy implying that all Israelis are guilty of burning children? One could read the sentence that way. This is like the Catholic Church until 1965, smearing every Jew with the guilt of murdering not only one man, but God himself. In other words, what we saw here last week in this festival of anti-Semitic-like attacks on the Jewish religion and those who live by it. Sima Kadmon denies Jewish excellence. Ron Ben Ishai denies we are any different than ISIS. Those murders last week lit the spark of Jewish anti-Judaism among those who resent its demands and refuse to live by them and hate those who do. Well, on the good news side of the ledger, this first day of the Jewish week, we have the declaration by Senator Chuck Schumer of his opposition to the Iran plan cooked up by those two reprehensible men, Obama and Kerry. And his explanation was most impressive in its breadth of knowledge and serious thought. Schumer graduated public high school James Madison in Brooklyn and scored 2 800s on his college boards. He's a bright guy. And he did the right thing in publishing his reasoning for opposing the deal and did it now and did not wait until the end, as some feared he might. We have been dealt a terrible hand by Obama, the Muslim secret agent, and his stooge John Kerry. But much can be salvaged by persuading an overwhelming number of votes in Congress to defeat Obama's veto. And one suspects Chuck Schumer will be spending the coming few weeks working on fellow Democrats and persuading them that this is above partisan politics. He must tell the Democrats, listen, nothing personal, guys, against Democrats in general, but these two fellows at the top, Obama and Kerry, are loose cannon. They're out of control. They don't know what they're doing, to put the best face on it. In simplest terms, they want to fork over $150 billion and allow Iran to build atomic weapons, if not in this decade, then the next, and of course, allow them to continue to develop their arsenal of intercontinental missiles, whose sole purpose can only be the delivery of atomic weapons. Iran's quest for such missiles, for sure, is not to see the clouds over drought-stricken California to make it rain. The Iranians want to proceed with their A-bomb project and build missiles to deliver A-bombs, even to America. Obama and Kerry agreed to this. And even to do a wire transfer of $150 billion. This is madness. This is reminiscent of other left-thinking political schemes in history concocted by leftists with no mature sense of humanity, of the human personality and human character. The Oslo abomination rested on the insane belief by Peres and Rabin and Balin that Yasser Arafat was a man they could do business with, that with him you could make an agreement, write it down, sign it, and be assured he would follow through on what he put his signature to. And I say Peres, Rabin, Balin, etc., were men of no wisdom about other men. The Mossad told Rabin and Peres before the Oslo signing that Arafat had signed 200 agreements in his career with other parties, most of them Arabs and certainly none of them Jews, and broke every one of them. But with the Jews was the implication he was going to start keeping his word. Still, they went ahead with their dream of peace. And in this Obama-Kerry plan, I see the same stupidity about people at work. As Israel should never have entered into negotiations with the PLO in 1993, so the United States and the P5-1 should never have entered into negotiations with Iran. Iran needs to be dictated to by a coalition of superior strength free peoples and told what it can and cannot do. Obama is a textbook leftist, a postmodern liberal, in believing that diplomacy is always better than war. Not true. That is why free peoples need armed forces to defend themselves from others who would attack, and peoples not open to diplomatic solutions. This evening on CNN, Obama's taped interview with fellow Muslim Fareed Zakaria will show him attacking the Prime Minister of Israel for interfering with American foreign policy as no other foreign leader ever has. This Obama guy is an evil man. He's a punk. Instead of arguing the merits of his deal and why Netanyahu was wrong, he attacks Netanyahu's lack of politesse and proper behavior. He's a Budinsky interfering with American foreign policy that by implication is none of his business. Right, Obama wants Iran to have an atomic bomb. Iran says it wants to obliterate Israel with an atomic bomb. And he says this is none of Israel's business. He insinuated that the opponents of his plan are also beholden to their financial backers, wink, wink, AIPAC, which he suggested also supported the invasion of Iraq in 2003, when that is not another one of his lies. AIPAC took no position. But what I found most revealing in his verbiage last week was his likening of the Republican opposition to the hardliners in Iran. The implication was that they're siding with the enemy. They're committing treason. And as so often with Muslims like him, whose minds operate at a quite low level, this is more psychological projection. You know how the Arabs in Yosh, whenever there's a real estate dispute, growl before the cameras, they're stealing our land. Well, this is a cover-up for the Arabs coveting our land. They're the ones hungry to steal our land and accuse us of wanting to steal theirs. So here, too, is this Muslim Obama accusing the opposition basically of colluding with the enemy, which is exactly what his plan is all about. People have been saying this since last spring's round of negotiations around the table. The representatives of the P5-1 countries in Iran, the U.S., was playing advocate for the Iranian positions and demands. Obama is a traitor and is now smearing his opponents with disloyalty to the U.S. Kerry, too. And this is not the first time he has sided with the enemy against his own country. You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. On the home front today, the Attorney General, Yehuda Weinstein, the famous Tel Aviv criminal defense lawyer, and surely a man in secular rebellion against Jewishness, told Culture Ministress Miri Regev that she cannot deny funds to a cultural group because of its political orientation or opinions. And Miri Regev said, more or less, that it's not his business, it's not his authority in cultural matters to make such decisions. It's hers. At issue is her refusal to fund that play by an Arab theater group in Haifa, glorifying a terrorist who, before he murdered an Israeli soldier, tortured him horribly. When Regev took office, she defunded the project, and ever since, it's been an issue. And here again is a Jew, Weinstein, and those he represents, rebelling against the Jewish people's collective identity. Anything that sets us apart sets off alarm bells in their heads, and out come accusations of racism. In Weinstein's postmodern valueless world, an Arab playwright has the right to present reality as he sees it. Oh, I agree, but I don't agree that the government of Israel has to pay for it, especially when it smears the Jewish nation with baseless lies. I think Israel already has a statute defunding any municipality, principally in the Galilee towns where the Arabs are, that celebrates the Nakba, the catastrophe of 1948, whose sole purpose is to smear the Jewish War of Independence as a racist, fascist persecution of an ancient nation whose land the Jews stole from them. If Arabs want to write such stuff and publish such stuff with their own money, who can stop them? But don't expect the government of Israel to support them. So today's news story of Weinstein trying to dictate to Miri Regev, it's another chapter in the endless soap opera here of Jews who are forever wrestling over their Jewish identity and what that means. Wrestling between those who reject it, because it is a religious identity, and those who attempt to reform it to be more like a Gentile religion, which in our generation has come to mean no religion. If the 18th century was the age of reason, ours is the age of narcissism. In the 1970s, American writer Tom Wolfe called it the Me Decade, and psychoanalyst, psychiatrist Otto Kernberg, MD, wrote of Borderline Conditions and Pathological Narcissism, technical volume, and the narcissist is not very big on being the member of a group, with a group identity larger than his own. Jewishness makes demands on Jews, which restricts their ability to do their own thing whenever and wherever they want. The narcissist, by contrast, likes his freedom from connections and obligations and group identities, and certainly not to a national identity, which the narcissist sneeringly dismisses as tribalism. Patriotism is not for the narcissist. So Yehuda Weinstein and his slice of Israeli society are made uncomfortable when Ministress of Culture Miri Regev declares that some artistic creation in support of a monstrous Jew killer will not receive government assistance. In Weinstein's universe, who is to say who's right and who's wrong in the clash between the Jews of Israel and what he perceives as the aggrieved ancient Palestinians? They have their narrative, which is as valid as Israel's Zionist narrative. This is a world of rudderless relativism. There is no right or wrong, only points of view. And in a world of no right and no wrong, anything goes. last item. Tomorrow we may hear of yet another anti-Israel act by the Obama administration. Last February, you may remember, a federal court in Manhattan found for the plaintiffs, the families of American citizens, commonly Jews in Israel at the time, who were murdered and otherwise wounded by the PLO, that is the PA itself, during the first years of the Second Intifada. The court ordered the PA to fork over $218.5 million. Only since February, Obama's Department of Justice has considered intervening. And the last day to do that is tomorrow, intervening, of course, on the side of the Jew killers. To quote Dana Carvey's Church Lady, isn't that special? The U.S. government may go to bat for the PLO against its own citizens because it wants to help the victims of Zionism, and this judgment could constitute a major blow to the PA that the U.S. government still has hopes of becoming a new, shiny, ancient Palestinian state government. If the Obama government does intervene on the side of the PLO against its own citizens, it will be another black mark on the cursed rule of Barack Hussein Obama. Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.